Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission.
All right. Welcome, friends, to this episode. We're joined by a special guest today, friend of ours, Trevor Joy, is the executive pastor of Sending at the Village Church in Flower Mound, Texas, a really missions-minded church, very engaged in the work around the world for the past several years. So, Trevor, glad you could be with us, man. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, man, excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, man, well, we're going to jump right in. Just want to hear from you and hear your heart about four missions for the nations. Just talk about your own journey toward understanding the nations, the need to reach the unreached. Why is the task of missions important for you personally?
And yeah, don't forget to share a tiny bit about your family too, so we can get a picture of who you are.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, so I'm married to my wife, Rachel. We've been married for 16 years. We have four kids, ages 13, 10, 8, and 4. So we're right in the hot middle of it. Been at the Village now for 13 years. Before the Village, we were part of a church plant in Frisco, a church plant from the Village. And I came over here in 2008. Mm. And actually kind of that really molds into my journey with what we're talking about here. I came over in 2008. And, you know, I swear I was never going to pastor at a church, was pastoring for a nonprofit college ministry straight out of college, was in seminary at Southwestern. Like, man, I'm never going to work for church. And never say never. My wife and I came to the Village, you know, just as a young married couple, and they were planting a church in Frisco, Texas. And we were moving to Frisco. So we're like, hey, we'll go and be a part of it. That seems God's providence here.
Right on.
And then 6 months later, went on staff with that church and did what I swore I was never going to do. And I've been a churchman ever since. But, you know, for the church world, for me, my journey in pastoring is uniquely been in small group ministry. And so that's where I spent, you know, the bulk of my time. You know, I'd say a good portion of those 13 years been around small group ministry. And I would say even, you know, coming from a church planting background, mm-hmm. you know, being a multiplying church, like that part of our tribe, that's just always been there. That's been a huge focus for me. But in definitely for the area that I'm in, the people that I serve with, but unique journey for me is, if you would have asked me any time over the last, you know, 13, 15, or I mean, you know, 16 years of pastoring, if you had asked me about missions, man, I could have talked to you about the 1040 window. I could have probably dialogued about difficult countries to get into. I would have been, you know, savvy and aware of those things. But if you had asked me about the unreached, I would have had no concept for that.
Huh.
And it wasn't till about probably 5 years ago for me. And I was at my journey is, you know, leading small groups here for the Village, you know, really community focused. I was at a church planting conference, and I remember Kevin Peck from the Austin Stone, who's just been they've been an incredible church, you know, they're a sister church of ours and have just been amazing helping us on this journey. And he was teaching a session on emerging regions and was talking about the unreached. And so we were all about to go to dinner afterwards. So everybody kind of gathered at this last session. We were hearing him teach. And it was probably really the first time that I had been confronted with, man, there are billions of people in the world that actually don't have any access to the gospel whatsoever.
Yeah.
And anyway, we go to dinner that night, and I'm standing around talking to a few of the guys, and the question came up, hey, what'd you think about that last session?
Hmm.
And one of the other guys who's a pastor at a really, you know, large church in our network said, man, it was really convicting for me because I just don't ever think about the nations.
Hmm.
And man, that was one of those conversations that just got into my bones.
Yeah.
And it got into my bones, just deeply convicted for me, because I was going, man, I don't either.
Wow.
You know, I don't either. And I just had to come to that own place. So if it began for me for a place of just personal repentance.
Mm. Yeah.
I really just believe in, man, as a pastor, I don't think I've been faithfully pastoring the church I'm at towards the Great Commission.
Wow.
And that's probably like chapter one of the journey for me of God really beginning to open my eyes to this. And then like a virus, it just took over my life. It's one of those things, man, when you see it, when you understand it, you can't ever look back. And I remember 1 year in particular, you know, the Lord called me I was campus pastor here at the Village at one of our Flower Mound campus. And we were looking to hire a missions pastor to come in and build a department. It's something we really wanted to begin to grow in. Our church was turning that way and saying, we want to get passionate about reaching the nations. And I was just having this internal wrestle going, man, I don't think God's calling me to keep doing what I'm doing. I think God's calling me to do that.
Mm.
And so, man, stepped into that. And in 1 year, you know, began to try and lead our elder room in church that way, and got to go and be with some of our teams on the field, and actually got to go and sit in a house church in,
yeah,
in a place where, man, it was really dangerous to be a Christian, and in a place, yeah, where there was maybe five Christians in a town of 1 million Muslims. And
wow.
And man, just experiencing one, the vibrancy of the church there, of that fellowship, and then just also standing on a roof and looking over this city and realizing, man, if these folks that I was there with weren't there, these people wouldn't have any chance to hear the gospel.
Yeah, that's right.
And man, that just settled in a way that I had never had before. And then I'll real quickly share the story, because it was really incredible with our elders. We were going on a retreat, and we were all meeting at our building. I get there, and there's a lot of cars there, but nobody's there. It's the day when the church was closed on a Friday. And everybody's car's there, but they're not outside waiting. So I'm kind of getting a little frustrated, going, man, why isn't everybody out here? We're supposed to go. We're already running late. So I wait for a few minutes. Nobody comes out. I go inside, and they're all standing around praying over what appears to be this kind of older Middle Eastern gentleman. And they're all praying over him. And all of a sudden, and I'm standing here going, oh, okay, this is why they're not coming outside. What's happening? And Matt is standing there, and he says, Muhammad, I want you to tell Jesus what you want. And this guy literally professed his faith right there in our church.
Wow.
And so I'm going, what is happening? Somebody's going to have to tell me this story. Yeah. And so one of our elders stands like, hey, I'll tell you when we get in the car. One of our elders said, man, I was at home, felt like the Lord was prompting me to go to the church an hour early. He said, I had no idea what for. So I just went and sat in my car, was worshiping, had a work call to take, and was just going to be there. Well, there was this man named Muhammad who was at home washing dishes, Muslim background guy, at home washing dishes, and felt like he heard a loud, audible voice that said, go to church so they can tell you about me.
Wow.
And it was so profound for him. He dropped his dishes in the sink, got on his motorcycle, and just drove. You know, we're a church right there on a kind of a main road. And so he had driven by us several times. So he went there. And so he showed up, goes, knocks on the door. Of course, nobody's there. Then our elder sees this guy pull up a motorcycle, walk up to the church building, knock, and walk back out to the parking lot. So he rolled down his window and said, hey, can I help you? Muhammad tells him the story, and Stan's like, yes, we can talk. And so we're at lunch with our elders afterwards, and we're all just kind of going, man, what an amazing start to an elder retreat. We get to see a guy, yes, come to faith.
Incredible. In the
parking lot. You know, that never happens. Man. But the Lord used that moment, because what we got to share together in that lunch was, what was amazing was God was doing to Muhammad what he's doing to Muslims all over the world. Mm-hmm. He was speaking to him. Yep. And I said, what was amazing for Muhammad is all he had to do was get on his motorcycle, and he passed 15 churches.
That's it.
Probably, yep, countless amount of Christians,
yep,
where when God said, hey, go so they can tell you about me, he had a buffet of options to choose, yep, from. And
that's,
he
right,
thinks, you know, glory landed at our parking lot. We're able to do that.
Man.
But, you know, we got to just sit together under the weight of, there are billions of people around the world that we're speaking to in the same way, and they have nowhere to go with it.
Yep. Yeah. Similar testimonies you've heard like that, maybe around the world, of people receiving maybe a dream or a vision like that, right? Especially, mm-hmm, among the Muslim world, we've heard sort of stories or testimonies. And in a lot of places, just like you said, part of the testimony is the guy had to walk like 3 days or 4 days to,
that's
find,
right,
even, yeah, a Christian, right?
Yeah.
It's just the incredible realities of the unreached, just exactly, mm-hmm, what you're talking about. There's just not churches on every corner for them to go to.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that, man, it's just settled into us in ways that, man, we just can't turn back. You know, yeah, when you know it, when you understand it, when you see it, you taste it, you just go, man, this is what we got to give our lives to. You
that's
know?
Right.
So that's been my kind of my journey, and a lot of our journey as a church too.
Yeah.
We can resonate with so much of your story,
mm-hmm,
and I can hear your passion in your voice, which is awesome. I know it's from the heart.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you a bit more, just like in your daily life. We don't have a ton of experience working on a church staff in America, but, yeah, we are in full-time ministry and we have spent time in America. And I know it's easy to be busy with ministry, and then sometimes you realize, when was the last time I reached out to the lost, or the last time I shared the gospel? And so I just want to hear a bit from you personally. How do you, just in your daily life, maintain that zeal, that fervency, like, oh my goodness, I have the best news ever, Lord, please help me share that with people today, and just,
yes,
speak up for the gospel wherever you're at. I don't know, maybe your kids have sporting events.
Oh man, well, here's what's interesting about this. I'm literally preaching here in a couple of weeks and going to preach on evangelism, and I was looking at my wife and I's calendar. So starting this week, we have a practice every single night of the week. And so getting got to step into that concept of margin being the greatest, I think the greatest hindrance to living missionally. And so this is just all that to say is kind of what you're asking is just really, really fresh as of even this morning. So, and I love the way you phrase it because you're talking about, man, how do you kind of keep your heart fresh for these things? And I think first and foremost is I would go to prayer, you know, and I've been really grateful. I've had a few mentors, especially over the past several years. I feel like the Lord has really begun to impress on my heart in ways that honestly just didn't really exist for me in the first several years of pastoral ministry. The ministry of prayer and the importance of prayer and the power of prayer. You know, even our elders on Monday night, man, we just spent, one of our elders put up some of the Afghan Taliban leaders and just put their faces up on the board and said, I want us to pray for these people made in the image of God. And we're just going to pray. When you step into that ministry and realize prayer isn't passive, it's very much active. That's a lot of the work that we're called to be doing here. Even you guys, we've been praying for you guys in your space there. And that's a really primary way that we're really trying to stay active in the work here. But then just even what you're saying about sharing the gospel, I went to Lebanon some time ago and, got an international driver's license and was like, man, I'm going to rent a car. I'm going to drive there. Like, I don't want anybody to have to pick us up. And so I take a few people from here and we're driving to the country. And I have a kind of a reputation for being a bad driver here. I don't think I am. It's a constant argument with my wife.
Jesse does too. Driver.
No, come on now.
Fast
well,
driver.
She says, thank you. So she says I'm a bad driver. And I'm like, no, I drive with intention. I don't get in wrecks. I don't get
speeding
tickets. All those things. All the things that would be markers of being a bad driver, I don't have. But that's kind of the big joke here is I'm a bad driver. Well, I get in this country that has very, very few traffic laws or light signals or anything. And man, I felt right at home. I was like, all these people know how to drive and they do awesome. I was like, I'm not the problem. Everybody else here at home is the problem because you guys don't know how to drive. But I just felt at home and it was like, oh, no, this is great. Like, I feel normal here. That's a lot of part of, you know, especially for us, we're kind of in the suburbs of the suburbs here in Flyermo. And a lot of what we're contending for here is that when you begin, there are so many aspects about the Christian faith and what it means to follow Jesus that we're just missing out on that if you'll just step into, you will feel like you're at home. And that's a lot of what we're trying to get into. So for me, you know, not walking in those rhythms, man, that's what feels odd. And it's when you step into those rhythms, that's how it's supposed to feel. That's what it feels like to be at home. And when you're stepping out of just like we were talking about earlier, you know, we put those resources available on our website of just caring for people through prayer, 15-second testimony, sharing through circles, trying to empower people to do that. Going, man, if you're in line at the coffee shop, if you're here, man, just stepping into what God's doing. So that's a lot of what we're trying to do, you know, me personally, the same thing. So it's, man, I'm at the football practice and man, I'm just looking for opportunities to care for people through prayer. And, you know, that's a lot of what we're just contending for.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally, man. That's awesome.
I feel like we came to that realization also that it's God's design for us to be sharing the gospel. And so when we're not, it affects us spiritually. It affects our spiritual life. I do want to tell our listeners, if you would like to learn how to share the gospel and just care for people really simply in America or really anywhere in the world, please go to the Village Church website because they have 3 super helpful, like 5-minute videos. And we use the same tools.
That's right.
So it just feels like a like-mindedness.
Right.
That God can use that anywhere in the world.
Just every believer having a tool handy at the ready, right? Just in your pocket, you can pull out any conversation, anybody that you interact with, just being ready like that, man. That's just a huge, huge thing for the body of Christ. You guys are a part of Village Church, a few others. You mentioned the Austin Stone as well. You guys are kind of leading out in a new cooperative effort to catalyze multiplying movements among the unreached, targeting 100 UPGs globally, unreached people groups globally. So talk a little bit about the genesis of this project, how it came together, why it's so important, why it's crucial right now.
Yeah, man. So the start of it was Todd Engstrom, a good buddy of mine, one of my heroes. He's at the Austin Stone leading a lot of the missions efforts there. So the start of it is they came to a place where they realized, you know, that I think they had a goal of sending 100 people, you know, 100 people to the nations. You know, they hit that and they just kind of kept hitting their targets and they realized, man, if we want to, these next goals in terms of reaching people groups, if we want to do that, it's going to take more than us to get it done. You know, that even hitting their stride at their highest sending capacity, they're still going to need to be more. And so Todd kind of came to us, and then Spencer and Dusty, who are at Redeemer, kind of came to us with this idea of forming a cooperative. And at the time, it was about our churches and a few like-minded organizations saying, since we're all, you know, a big key for us is Launch Global is an amazing organization that, like, our whole mission staff or mobilization staff for Launch Global, they come here. And I mean, they're 100% of their time is spent doing discovery meetings, developing people in these tools, and casting vision for the nations. So all three of our churches, you know, utilize Launch Global. That's kind of the secret and the sauce, honestly, for us, for missions work, for mobilizing people to the nations. And we were also, we all had the same kind of sending pipeline at our churches and all with the same goal of reaching and reach. And we're all just really like-minded theologically, philosophically as churches. We're all in the A29 network together. So they kind of came to us and we're all really, we have a lot of all that equals really trusted relationships together.
Yeah.
But what if we work together to form healthy teams to send to the unreached? So if we pulled our shared resources and worked together to do this, which really meant the Stone was needing to kind of let us all draft off them until we could get somewhat caught up and then, and then begin to work together. It was last year we had, for the first time, we had a team formed from Redeemer, the Village, and the Stone, people being trained at our individual churches that were going together as a team to work among a hub, much like you guys are leading another hub that was in the Muslim world. And man, it just began to form. We're going, this is really incredible. We have a few like-minded organizations that are working together to do it. And so probably about a year ago, we were all at a kind of planning meeting together and we were kind of asking the question, if our goal is to reach 100 unreached people groups, we kind of did back of napkin math, reverse engineered it and said, how many peak goers are we going to need to send to the field to do that? And we said, wow, if all three of our churches in our best sending capacity, like if we're hitting all cylinders and we're sending tons of folks and there's movement out of our churches, we're still not getting anywhere close to sending as many goers as we need to the field to reach this. Well, we believe God has called us to lay it down for us to reach 100 unreached people groups. And so we said, well, we've got one of two options. We've either got kind of a formula here of how churches can work together that we can hand off. Or we've got a cooperative that we believe God is building. We can invite people into. We just spent some time praying and felt like God is calling us to invite people into it. And my role here on the U.S. side is really to cast vision for churches first for the unreached. And a lot of churches, man, here are in the same spot that we were in. When I'm talking with elders or lead pastors about churches, I'll say churches are anywhere on the spectrum from supporting to sending. And supporting would be a lot of what we were, and it's more reactive view to missions. And you guys do this all the time. You know, we have churches that maybe they're not cast a vision for the nations, but they're not opposed to it.
Right.
So if somebody within their congregation says, man, we feel God's calling us to go, that church is going to love it, support it, connecting with the sending agency, maybe even support them financially. And then, man, when you come home, we're going to pray for you. We'll send some gift baskets. And that's awesome. But they're not necessarily really engaged in the task.
Yep.
And really what I think the opportunity for us and what we're doing, what we've experienced as a church, we think the opportunity and the call on churches in this and the cooperative is to move from being a supporting church to a sending church, that a church really owns the task of mobilizing, training, sending, and caring for our goers on the field. And really what the cooperative is, because we're all sharing resources together, the cooperative is just creating the ecosystem for churches to do that.
Yeah.
You know, when we stepped into it, there's a lot of it. Candidly, we had no idea what we were doing. We have a huge heart, a ton of resources, and we want to send people to it, but we don't know how to get there. And a lot of what was facilitated us when the Stone kind of came to the table with this, it facilitated an environment for us to step in and draft off them, learn from them, and step into this work that honestly put us so many, I mean, years ahead to be able to do that. And that's what we want to create in this. One, because if there's going to be a church planting movement happening where you guys are, it's going to take a mobilization movement here in the States.
Yeah, right on.
And so the fire in the furnace for us is to see a mobilization movement happen among Western churches here. We have so many churches that we are in a close network with. I'm even just thinking Acts 29, churches that are passionate about planting, that are really a lot like we were, that just their eyes haven't been turned to the unreached or doing, you know, not really a whole lot in regards to the nations. But if they were to wake up and turn their eyes, there could have unbelievable impact. So that's a lot of what we're trying to do here is just stir that up and asking the Lord to stir up the hearts of our friends here that are pastoring faithful churches that are so pregnant with goers and leaders that we just want to see them lead.
We've mentioned it several times. I think maybe some others that we've had on as well have mentioned it. you can look at the world and watch the news and it seems like dark days, but man, I just feel like we're on the cusp of something incredible that the Lord's going to do just through this generation, young people that we interact with, that we spend time with, both here in South Asia and in the States, man. I just feel like the Lord is really working something that's really just going to pour forth in the coming days and decades, just as the, you know, new realities all around the world, population continuing to rise, rise of cities, those global realities of the 21st century, man. I feel like the Lord is raising up a force of laborers to meet that. And it's so encouraged by churches like y'all's, the cooperative. And that is, if anybody's interested, you can check out the website. It's 100upg.org, right? 100 the number, upg.org, I think is the website. So you can check out what they're doing through the co-op.
That's awesome. Hey, one thing I'd love to ask you, take a little turn here. So you guys have been on the field there for how long?
16 years now.
Yep. 16 years. So, you know, you're going through Southeastern, you've got kind of our generation. I mean, we've been in ministry about the same amount of time here. Mm-hmm. So there was our generation, you know, I remember being in college and there was a huge stir for ministry in the nations when I was in college. I get a pretty good idea what the generation for you and I came with. What are you seeing in this generation, both that the guys, the young folks that are coming, joining you guys on the field that you're seeing and talking to, what are you seeing that's both exciting and challenging to you?
Yeah.
And what would you say to pastors who are mobilizing that generation, training that generation? Hey, please be aware of this.
Because
I'll be real honest with you, like a lot of the younger generation can be really challenging. And so there's times where we're going, man, it can get frustrating and disheartening. Mm-hmm. But then I'll talk to guys on the field and say, hey, but this is also one of the most zealous generations.
Yeah.
So I don't want to miss that. Don't want to miss the opportunities.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Definitely, man. I think Trevor just took over. So we're going to try our best to answer the question. No, that's great, man. Excellent question. I think I would say, just first of all, so much of it depends on where they come from. In terms of, I think the quality of people that we see come out, their zeal for the work, their heart for the work, their understanding of the nations, so much of it really is kind of where they were brought up, the church that they were brought up in. If we're getting people that are coming out of Austin Soane, the Summit Church, even, you know, smaller, maybe that wouldn't be as famous churches, but where there's been intentionality from the leadership and there's been a culture built that is directed towards the nations, I think that just makes such a huge change. And so we see, and we really try to recruit intentionally from those types of churches. And that's what we see, I think, that encourages me, is to see that there are known spots now throughout the kind of US ecosystem where we're like, yes, they are the people who really, the exact heart that you described, that journey that you went through, they are people that are in churches where the leadership has gone through that journey. And they're saying, this is where we stand. We are sending to the nations. And I think that, I feel like that voice is increasing. I feel like there are others that are coming on board with that. I think that there's, you know, now multiple kind of arenas for people to get that voice, maybe through media or whatever, but man, just the local, the pastor, the leadership, even building the culture in the church to send out, I think is so key.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely have youngsters, as we call them on our team, that we love and value so much that we're kind of like, why does this new generation have such a bad rap? Because these guys are awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And also we have a high attrition rate in general on the field.
Yeah.
And so we want people who are trained and are committed. Yeah. So I think that's one difficulty, is now it's become so normal to go like, well, we'll try that out for a year or two, which is fine. There's a place for a person with a 2-year commitment for sure. Yeah. We value it.
Yeah.
But we also want a lot of team members who have a lot of experience in the harvest. So they know what they're signing up for and they're committed, like long-term, you know, not just trying it out.
Yeah. So I think that a lot of experience in the harvest, I'll just reemphasize that those tools, even that we mentioned, like on your website, training church people to do simple evangelism, discipleship, getting them out in their local harvest, that I feel like is one of the keys to mobilization, even long-term, like people that come out and they know they've done that in their home context, man, those are the ones that we would take all day long. But I would echo as well, I think just what Shaney said, that resiliency, that commitment to the calling. I think maybe some of the ways we talk about calling in this generation have become a bit different, that it seems kind of more flexible. And maybe there's ways that we talked about it in the past that were unhealthy, but I think that just like, man, I'm giving my life to this. You just don't see that as much. And honestly, I guess you don't see that as much in our generation either. We've seen a lot of people come and go over the years. So,
but we're thankful for Launch Global and the people that they're sending us. and just that servant-hearted attitude also. I mean, today we had one single lady who took my daughter out for a birthday lunch and is investing in her. So I'm just like, thank you, Lord. Thank you that she wants to serve and that she sees value in serving our kids alongside getting out there in the harvest.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So in the co-op, you guys specifically talk about, it says that the co-op exists to promote movements, church planting movements, as a missions priority. So talk about specifically why you guys made that. Why did you make that explicit, right? Why not just say like, hey, we're about planting healthy churches among the nations or something. Why did you choose the wording that you did?
Yeah. So I think we chose wordings that we did because that's our strategy. So church planting movements among the unreached, that's our strategy.
Yep.
And you know, it's interesting. So me dialoguing with you about this, because we literally, your podcast not too long ago where you talked about movements was just so helpful. I really encourage anybody to go back and listen to that. If you have questions about movements theologically, philosophically, to go back and listen to that. So you just did a great job nailing that.
Thanks, man.
But that for us, that's our strategy. So everything we do here amongst our church, you know, how we're training, mobilizing and training people here is for the work of movements among the nations, church planting movements. And so we're training people here in church planting with a desire to see that work happen on the fields. In fact, we were talking about these numbers the other day, and I'd love to get into a little bit of this dialogue, because I think this is a lot of the conversation that's going on, at least on our side of things, and I think probably with you too.
Yeah.
Is around church planting movements and some of the, I think some of the misnomers that are around there. Because a lot of people will talk about church planting movements, like rapidly multiplying movements of churches planting churches.
Yep.
And think that we're abandoning the concept of a biblical church or a healthy church.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, all that is in it. And that's what we're trying to do. And honestly, that's the invitation. I was meeting with some elders the other day. We were talking about this. And they said, well, what if these churches that we're planting, aren't healthy churches or don't grow to be healthy churches? Mm-hmm. And my response to them was, well, you as elders who are overseeing this work, that's the invitation and
that's the expectation. And the challenge. You. Yeah. Right and on.
The challenge.
Yep.
Is that it is, if we're losing 44,000 people a day just to death that have never heard the gospel,
yep,
that our traditional method, our strategy of, you know, kind of the slow growth method of planting a church and hoping that they'll see a cover here and there. Mm-hmm. And we're not even keeping up with population growth, let alone population death.
That's right.
Yep. Oh man. In most of the conversation I'm having that with people that aren't, you know, that just haven't seen it, just haven't been amongst scores of thousands or millions of people that have never heard the name of Jesus. When you are, you're just going, man, we've got, the urgency is too great.
That's right.
So to answer your question, I mean, we're intentionally pursuing church planting movements out of urgency.
Yep.
Out of urgency. That's what's driving that, is urgency.
That's it.
That we want to see the task finished. We want to see people reach with the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not looking for rapid.
Yeah.
We're looking for intentional.
Yeah. Right on.
We're not looking for a massive amount of numbers. We're just urgent to finish.
That's good. Task.
And I think that's where some of the conversation has got to turn. In fact, I'm meeting with some elders of a church here locally next week. And that's going to be a lot of my conversation. We care deeply about the growth and formation of churches, and these churches were planted. And we also don't feel, you know, any sort of weird pressure to label some group of people a church that may not yet necessarily be a church yet.
Right.
Yeah. But we do feel the urgency to get to a place with this. We can call this a church. And we also feel the equal urgency, though we want to see that thing grow. We believe fundamentally, and this is where I think it begins to push on the church here in the West, that we believe fundamentally a mark, what should be the primary mark of a healthy church, is that it's a multiplying church.
There you go.
And I think that's the message that's got to come back towards the West,
man,
and push and challenge on us.
That's
that we've grown to believe that a healthy church is one that grows within itself.
Mm-hmm.
And a primary mark of a healthy church is one that multiplies.
Man.
And so I think that's where the conversation begins to turn on its head. And that's, you kind of woke up something to me, and even in this part of the dialogue, but that's what we're passionate about. And that's the conversation we're having here, inviting churches into, because most of the churches we talk about are passionate about planting churches.
Yeah.
And passionate about planting churches that plant churches. Do we have time for me to tell you a quick story?
Do it, man, please.
So I'm talking with one of our pastors in a neighboring city to us. It's kind of a growing city, probably maybe 40 or 50,000 people, but it's about to boom quite a bit. And we have two of our like-minded, really amazing churches that just got planted there. There's other churches there because we're, you know, we're here in Texas and there's churches everywhere.
Sure.
There's other churches already there, but we have two other guys that have planted amazing churches there that are growing, both at a couple hundred people and moving. I was sitting with one of them last year and I said, man, how are you doing? Just catching up. And he said, man, I'm good, but I've kind of been discouraged lately. And I said, why are you discouraged? And he said, they're getting to a place where they're moving into a permanent facility. And he said, I was talking with the city the other day and found out that there were 10 new churches that had applied to plant in their city, 10 new ones in the next year.
Wow.
And him and I just sat there and lamented because we're going, man, there are already numerous. I mean, if I said 6 churches there, I'm sure I'm well within safe range of how many churches. And they're doing an amazing work. And there was 10 other churches that were already applying with the city to go in.
Wow.
Because so much of, man, our church planting here has been like Chick-fil-A. Let's go where the population growth is.
But the franchise.
A franchise. Let's go where the business has the best chance of a startup.
That's right.
And him and I were just lamenting. We're like, man, if something doesn't change here.
Wow.
And I always say, if nothing changes, then nothing changes. But that's just kind of, we're asking the Lord, like, our playbook has to change or we're not going to move the needle.
Man.
And so that's where this has begun weighing on us and begins to kind of hit some things to us. Does that make sense?
Man, that's such a great word.
It's so helpful. And so right now we're looking out our window and we have skyscrapers, 20, 24 story skyscrapers all around us. And behind them, we can also see slums. So when I hear you say that, I hear you saying, I'm a voice for all those people who don't have access.
Yep.
I'm a voice for them. I'm standing up for them. They need to have access. It's urgent. Something that really bothers me is when people insinuate that urgency of for the lost isn't a valid reason to pursue movements.
Yeah.
How would you kind of help someone understand that?
Oh, man, that's a... Because what you're at is not a philosophical question. It's a heart question.
Mm.
The biggest way that I'm trying to help people understand that is ask them to get on a plane and come with me. I think you have to see it. I think you have to see it. And I think you have to be, you know, if you're connected to the work, you know, I have folks here on my staff that is just the air we breathe. And then people like y'all that are our heroes that just get to talk to and just try and stay close to that reality. You know, we always talk about this. Church work is the gravity that always wins, you know, and so it can just be true, man. There's so much here.
Yep.
There's so many amazing things that are vying for our attention here, from Bible studies to community groups to, you know, regatherings, all really incredible things. But again, that urgency, you know, that heart for the lost. And I think it's true. If you don't have the heart for the lost where you are, then chances are you're not going to have a heart for the lost that are thousands of miles away from you. So I do think there is a lot of validity that it begins there, that we're getting our people activated in what it means to faithfully follow Jesus, have a heart for the lost, pray for the lost, pursue the lost. And I think that's a big piece to it. The other thing that is, I think it's just got to be a consistent thing the church has to rally around. I just don't think we have the option not to talk about it often. And we talk, the language is, it's an unfinished task. When things are unfinished, then you talk about it, you pursue it until it's finished.
That's right.
It's not it's not something that you bring up once a year. That's a hobby.
This
is the task. And so for us, a lot of language we use here is, you know, it's not a cause, it's a command. So this isn't something that we just kind of get about every season. We're going to go kind of do this building project or serve in this way. It's a command. This is something that we don't have a choice. We have to be passionate about. And so, and that's the fight. I mean, I think what you just said right there, sister, has just nailed it down. That's the fight. That's what we're wrestling after. I want that urgency to grow. And there's a lot of things, even really good things, that are contending for that urgency.
You know? That's right.
Same for us as missionaries, for sure.
And I think that we've talked about this a lot, just to your point about that urgency. Urgency for the lost is a theological issue, right? It's not just like some people can be passionate about missions and some people can't. If we take the reality of hell seriously, if we read our Bibles, if we read passages like Romans 10, it is a theological issue. Like you said, it's a matter of command, right?
Yeah.
And so the urgency has to be felt, at the very least, it has to be felt on both sides of that conversation of, yeah, we desire churches to be healthy, man, but we desire the lost to hear, right? There's a world out there. We want hearing nations and healthy churches, right? Both. We got to feel the tension, the pull between those two. And to kind of find yourself placed on one or the other side, and maybe to be speaking to the other, to like critiquing those you feel like are pulling the weight too far the other way. It's like, well, that's the challenge for us, right? If you see a weakness there, that's the challenge for us to stand up, like you said, and to step into that gap and for us to enter into that tension as well and say, hey, man, we care about both of these. We're going to do what we can to push both of these forward. It's for the church.
Absolutely.
Well, Trevor, this has been awesome, man. I think, thank you so much for taking the time to really clarify. That's what I love about our interactions. That's what I love about your church, as I feel like you guys really, you really hold the rope, not just in terms of support, not just in sending people out, but even in like raising the banner for this, raising the banner for the unreached, doing what you're doing, meeting with other pastors, meeting with other churches, and just helping them open their eyes, mm-hmm. right? So much of whoever we are, wherever we're raised in the world, we just assume that what we're raised with is normal. Yeah. And I think that just encountering churches, encountering pastors, and helping them to see that biblical reality, just like you encountered it several years ago, right? That there is a biblical reality that people are out there that don't even have access. There's no way for them to hear about the Savior of the world. And for them, that means they can't enter into the very thing that God desires more than anything in the world, right? It's to gather his people from every nation, right. tribe, people, and language to worship him. So, that's man, right. just encouraged by your work, man, encouraged by your example and by your church. Just thanks for the friendship and for this time, brother. It's been great.
Oh, thanks, man. Such a joy.
Thank you. You've challenged and encouraged us for sure.
So, folks, check out the website for the Village Church, 100upg.org as well. And, man, just heed these words. Be blessed today.